The management of this station would like to apologize for anything that may offend you on today's show. Specifically, we'd like to preemptively say we're sorry to women, men, children, the elderly, pets, all major world religions, the governors of all 50 states and their families, Heidi and Spencer Pratt, and anyone who requested a song we did not play. Let's return to the show, which will remain nameless so we can use this apology again in the event we need to fire them after giving in to protesters. And now, for now, here's...
Juke. Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
On the next CSI, a new mom got drunk and breastfed her baby. And now, David Caruso is milking it for all it's worth on CSI Miami. What do we got?
Well, Horatio, the female suspect was seen breastfeeding her baby while under the influence.
This is one mom who's a real boob. David Caruso has latched onto the teat of cliches and is getting his fill on CSI Miami.
Horatio, the drunken mom just signed a confession. She's in the holding cell sleeping it off.
That means tomorrow she'll go back to nursing. Nursing a hangover. David Caruso has got one strong sucking reflex on the next CSI Miami.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Once-a-Year Romantic.
Mr. Once-a-Year Romantic.
You bought her the flowers, the chocolates, and paid for dinner. But now, Valentine's Day is over, so it's back to your usual Whitman sampler of slovenly, unkept, unromantic behavior.
I love you. Now be quiet. Game is on.
A whole night of not checking out women's butts? Impressive.
At least I didn't get caught looking at their chest. Yeah.
So the next time you witness a man take a woman out on that special night, and the next day go right back to taking her for granted, nod your head in acknowledged insensitivity to Mr. Once a Year Romantic, a real American hero.
Mr. Once a Year Romantic.
Because nothing says I love you like, woman, get me another beer.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on radio. It's Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And good morning, and welcome to Monday, February 15th. We're back live in the studio after Valentine's Day. And I'm proud to say I have a beautiful woman in the studio. You are back here for the second time.
Thank you.
And, of course, your name is Kara, if I remember correctly.
You got it, Sam. Kara with a K. Hey.
Well, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
You're looking like sunshine this morning. You're happy and glowing and everything.
You know, I'm a really good makeup artist. And
really?
Yep, I am. I know how to pat that weave and, you know, fix that face. And
yeah, but it's all in the attitude that
it really
you have.
Is,
it's
man.
It's more than that, you know.
Thank you. Is my hair sunlight shining through today?
There you go, you see. And we have TJ McCormick in the studio for a few minutes with us. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, old dear friend of mine. You know, man, you know, I say old friend a couple of... Last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, you were as sick as a dog, and for like about a month, it was like of biblical proportions. It was like, you know,
it really was.
You were sick forever, and there was like locusts coming out his nose, and there was all these mucus. Yeah, well, you know, whatever. Either way, it was biblical. And but no, man, you know, the two year anniversary of LA Talk Radio went right past us.
That's true.
You weren't even on the air that day.
Wow, that's so awesome.
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've been doing this, and TJ, from day one. Mm-hmm. You know,
so
from
cool.
day one.
It is. It really is. And you know, a lot's happened in those 2 years. But anyway.
And the shows are sure different now, aren't they?
I mean, night and day. Night and day.
Yeah. We sound a lot more professional now and
yes.
stuff. And the shows, all of them, sort of like evolved, you know, and became... if you listen to the early... archives, mm-hmm. you wouldn't recognize it as the same shows, you know.
Wow.
I mean, TJ used to sit there and make characters and talk to himself and stuff, mm-hmm. and it was the funniest thing. Not that it's not great now, you know, but he sort of found a direction, and now it's more
into politics and stuff. Yeah, it started off as pure
comedy, and
then it went into, and it actually was funny. Any given day of the week, it could have been one or the other. I mean,
it had
no identity whatsoever, and it was cool because it actually reminded me of kind of reminded me of like 1986, you know, when I started doing stand-up. It reminded me of not knowing what I wanted to say, how I wanted to say it, and this kind of the same learning curve happened 20 years ago, 23 years ago now, as sort of happened in the last year and a half
That's
of
so
doing
cool.
the show.
Yeah,
and so it's come around really nicely, and the shows have really, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I Googled you guys. I totally got my little Google on. I was like, oh, I want a radio show.
let's find out about these people. Yeah, there you go.
You know, I'm tweeting about it. I'm Facebooking about it. MySpacing about it. You know.
Yeah.
I know. So I'm excited. It's looking great.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that with Facebook, I was thinking yesterday that you know because I Facebooked someone before I met them and stuff, and it's like you find out everything about them before you even meet them in person. You know.
I know. I mean, right. You profile them.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yes. Yes.
It's not what it used to be. Man,
yeah, like know? A guy I started dating, and we actually, we had only been on like one or two dates, and of course I did the whole Facebook background check, and found out like, you know those little organizations that you belong to, or the pages that you're fans of, and his was like International Women of Breastfeeding, and he was a fan of, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, what could he possibly see in you?
I don't know, but
Jesus
I was
Christ.
Like, I was like, that's just not good. But then, you know, whatever.
Seriously.
Working out great.
No, I mean, Kara's wearing an outfit for television on radio. And I mean, we're eternally grateful over here.
Yeah, you're making TJ crazy.
Holy
because,
shit. Well, it's tomorrow, you know, it's the end of, it's the beginning of Lent on Wednesday. It's Ash Wednesday. So,
wow.
Are you going to be at any Mardi Gras festivities or anything like that where I could accidentally be?
Yeah. No. You know, I don't know. I say this. It's ridiculous, but, you know, it's a typical Tuesday in LA. Or typical Monday. I mean, people here are ridiculous in what they wear. And people don't get that. Like, wearing dresses are kind of like, it's like the new muumuu.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about jeans fitting. You don't really have to worry about anything other than throw it on, belt it, boom, ready to go. Bam.
That's true. So you don't have to spend hours there.
But
in front
no. This outfit, though, is like insane.
Okay.
Really?
It's ridiculous. No, you so know exactly.
Yeah.
You know where he's looking.
I'm sitting here thinking.
He's looking at the area you're advertising.
It's ridiculous.
See, the reality is, I'm trying to, like, defend myself. I'm like, backpedal.
No, nothing to defend.
No,
not
there's
all.
Nothing to defend. I think it's amazing, and when you have great things, you show them, you know? And you know, you sort of like build a personality, I think, around the circumstances in your life.
It's absolutely the way it should be. You know what I mean? Look, it's my wife is a very sexy woman, and she's always had she's a dancer. She's always had a fantastic physique, and she will absolutely, you know,
rock it.
Yes, God damn it, yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No,
you know, I've noticed
what you're doing is awesome here.
Keep up the charity. Keep up the good work. Keep up the foundation.
Right?
Can I be honest, though? Here's the reality. Everybody's built differently. Right. I'm not really, and believe it or not, I know you guys aren't going to believe this, I'm not really setting out to achieve this look. I'm just putting on clothes.
Right.
I'm serious. And this is how it looks. I'm not going out of my way to wear grandma clothes to cover it up.
Right.
I'm just still shopping at Forever 21.
Right.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? So that's, that's what's happening.
I'm not saying
that's
she's
good.
Stacked. She wears a turtleneck and it shows cleavage. I mean, you know.
Well,
God bless you. Seriously.
God bless you too, TJ.
No, God's already blessed you.
Thank you.
Where are you from, by the way? Forgive me.
I'm originally from Texas. Yeehaw.
Whereabouts?
Outside of Houston, really, really small dot on the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very tiny little town called Bay Cliff.
Oh, okay. Is that near Corpus Christi? Is
Absolutely
that Galveston?
Not really.
Houston,
actually, it's on Galveston Bay. It's in between Houston and Galveston on the coast, and it's a super little, you know, I hate to say. dumpy, but it is kind of a dumpy town. People know it's dumpy. I'm seriously, seriously, I'd ask people, they'll be like, oh, where are you from? In Houston. And I'll be like, well, do you know where the city is? They're like, yeah. Do you know where the city is? Yeah. Right. You know where the city is? Yeah. Well, we're right next to it. It's called Big Cliff. Like, never heard of it.
Yeah, no,
it doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's in the middle of the triangle there. And it's, but it's a it sounds like it's a nice place to be from.
It actually is. I mean, you know, I think Texas is great. It's very big, diverse, and the town is like, you know, it's good old boy, kind of like, pop a beer, let's shoot some pool.
Yeah.
You know, real good upbringing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's actually, it's a great place to be from.
And how does that translate into your existence here in Los Angeles?
Well, here's the deal, TJ, okay?
What do you think? It's everybody wants to come to Hollywood, and I mean, you know.
But a lot of times, you come here because you have to, and there's people who do get here and love it. You have adapted beautifully. You love L.A., Sam.
I can't say that.
Really?
Los Angeles. I mean, it's gone from just like wishing I was home and missing good pizza and my friends to, you know, it's gone from that to basically being convicted. I mean, I have the conviction that this is one of the worst places in the world.
Top three reasons why.
It took you a long time to figure that out.
It did, man. It did. The people.
Okay.
And when I say the people...
Although I have found that since we opened the station and stuff, there are a lot of great people in this town as well, you know?
Yeah.
So we can't make the generalizations, but go ahead.
I'm going to make the regular...
Okay, yes. Go ahead.
Go for it.
Say the people. Well, then again, though, if you're a good person, you'll find... You know what? How many shitheads have you kicked out of here, though?
And how many people have you turned away?
Because they are
schmuckos. And the people that flaked on me as well.
There you go. Oh, so you see?
The flake factor.
But you sort of balance it a little bit.
The flake factor is so high, and I don't. You know what? I have to be honest. Yeah. I have really been a huge flake. Mm-hmm. I admit it. Try to reform it, but the reality is you get away with it in this town. You cannot show up, not call back, not be there. Yeah. No consequences other than you can't sleep at night.
And that's what I'm saying about
it's
the people.
It's bad. It's not
the lack
good.
Of the lack of civility and the lack of personal responsibility.
Yeah, it's not good.
You can't count on people. And also the traffic. The traffic, and that speaks to so many other things, you know, but the traffic and the reasons for the traffic, the idea that it's an awful city government that doesn't know how to do anything about implementing any kind of legitimate mass transit, and it also has a lot to do with the idea of just poorly spent money and bad priorities and all that when it comes to the government. So you can fold in the government anywhere along the lines here. And third, I would say, illegal immigrants and just a total lack of assimilation of immigrant groups.
Mm.
Right. That's it right there. I mean, I'm talking about...
Where are you originally from, though? I don't know.
I'm from Afghanistan originally.
Okay. But, great.
No, I'm from New York. I'm from New York.
His name is TJ Osama.
And sorry if the hookah is bothering you. But seriously, you know, I mean, I'm an equal opportunity, you know, I'm annoyed by everybody, you know? I mean, literally from Armenians who want to drive fast and wear, you know, a bottle of cologne on each arm, to Mexicans who simply just refuse to speak English, to quite frankly, Israeli business owners.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
There you go. I know a lot of them.
No, but you know, it's just there's a lack of assimilation here on the part of immigrant groups.
Yeah,
because political correctness and the way that things are done in Los Angeles, nobody feels the pressure or the need to assimilate, really. You know, rarely. You know, and there are immigrants.
So you're saying it's not really a melting pot here. It's just a bunch of groups that are unrelated.
Right. It's like there's Thai town, there's Korea town, there's this, there's little Armenia, there's blah, 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 blah.
It's like a really bad stew.
And it's somebody who put it perfectly, is that it's a fruit salad in the sense that, you know, when you look at a bowl of fruit salad, you can see every individual, and you don't. That's watermelon. That's a banana. That's a strawberry.
Right.
You know, you can see there. It's not. It's not.
It's not functional.
No. Nothing is blended in with either. Yeah. So you know. So that does annoy me. And yes. Listen. I gotta say it is frustrating as hell to walk. Listen. That's why when I have family. I just had in-laws and my sister was just here. So you know, out of town is coming. You bring them to In-N-Out. And you know, you say, look, you've got to.
No.
It's,
get your animal style.
And I tell you exactly. Exactly. And she goes and my sister noticed the kids in the drive-thru and she was like, wow, those are just those kids are so good at it. Wow, they're so friendly and smart. And I said, that's it. I said, that's the only kind of, that's the only place where you get service like that in Los Angeles.
What?
At In-N-Out, where you get a kid speaking English with clear eyes, looking at you, smiling, grateful that you're there doing business and grateful to take your money and happy to hand you their product. Hmm. Everywhere else you go, you get a dopey, sleepy-eyed somebody with some kind of friggin' accent that I gotta say things six times so that they understand it, the motherfuckers. I gotta say something six times.
That's your fault because you don't know Spanish.
I'm standing here in my goddamn zip code, and I've got to say something five or six times because the dopey lump on the log behind the counter doesn't know. Hold the pickle. Hold the fucking pickle. Give me a pickle. Hold the pickle.
Wow,
no pickle.
Tell us how you really feel, TJ. Motherfuckers.
So that's
but
I got to go
TJ
home.
TJ sees the inner workings, too, like the politics of it all.
Yeah, yeah.
So he really
the
gets...
The politics, it's awful. Sam and I have spoken about what generally speaking,
okay.
To keep you safe, what part of town do you live in? I live
kind of east of Hollywood, but near Los Feliz.
Okay, nice. Nice area.
Canyon area.
Yeah, no, very nice area. That's cool. You got bottle collectors, you got people with shopping carts, you got, you know, we're the mm-hmm. homeless capital of the world based on the weather and the politics.
It's going to be homeless. Get a good tan.
Get a good tan, live at the beach.
Get rich.
The politics of the city, the lack of police.
But there's so many police when you, like, your tags are expired on your car.
They're everywhere.
You know,
they're everywhere.
I'm like, really? We're in L.A. and you're worried about my tags? You know, I haven't had, you know, knock on wood, thank you, Lord, I've never had a moving violation, but those tags, man.
Oh, I doubt that.
You know,
that.
I got to take
oh,
out
I'm
a
sorry,
home.
You mean
well,
I'm sorry.
It took me a while. No, I got to take out a home mortgage to get my car re-registered. Yep. It's like, come on, people. Can we do a payment plan here?
You know, the other night, I was, and that's what it amounts to. It's so expensive, and they want, and I tell you what, the other night, I'm pretty damn sure that the cops followed me. I was going along Burbank Boulevard, and I think I might have been going a little quick, and I hit the brakes because there was a dip in the road, not because I saw a cop. I happened to see the cop as I went over the dip in the road. But anyway, it was one of those moments where it's like, boy, I could have been telegraphing that I was going – I might have even looked like I was going faster than I was because I hit the brakes like that. And sure enough, man, after I – and the crimes, the moving violations that I had just experienced in that 10 minutes out – on the roads of Los Angeles, right. People not stopping for red lights, just making the right. All these violations that I experienced. Sure enough, I'm pretty damn sure the cop pulled out and followed me because I went into the Ralphs at Van Nuys and Burbank. And I pull in and I park. And sure enough, there's the cop still behind. And he's not in the parking lot.
Really?
And I get out of my freaking car. Yeah, I get out of my car and I go to walk in. And I kind of had a feeling, boy, maybe he did kind of pick me up there at that intersection, whatever. And now he's sitting there and sees me. Here I am in like total suburban dad clothes. You know, I got my Yankee hat on and a sweatshirt. And I'm obviously going into Ralph's to buy baby food. I had it written all over me. And I even stood there and kind of like was almost kind of showing the cop, you know, and I said, you want to go? And, you know, I kind of waved him on and he sort of waved me on. It's okay, thanks a lot. And I was like, I can't believe you spent a friggin' nanosecond on me when at that moment there were 15 friggin', oh, I almost said,
yeah, no,
Mexicans friggin' tagging, you know, this, that, the other thing, you know, in somebody's garage in my neighborhood, and you know, and they're spending a minute worried about me if I was going.
It's really,
you know,
really, really comical. I totally understand. It's like, but when those tags are expired, or you're looking like you're just, oh, you dipped, you braked,
yeah,
you're getting baby food, boom,
yeah, 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 it's you know,
yeah, it's really interesting.
And then this morning I had a confrontation with the guy.
You
on
did
the way here.
Yeah,
yeah, I participated in. It was road rage at a red light. It was non-moving road rage.
Oh, that means that,
it was a lot of this. It was this stuff. It was the this and the this and the this.
And
his rear view and my rear view.
Yeah.
It was all gestures and stuff like that. And you know what, man? It's like, you got it. I cannot. I'm a father. I cannot participate in that stuff. You have to let that stuff go.
You got to. I did it at a...
And it sucks you in, too, you know?
It sucks you in, like, it can escalate because you don't know who that person is, man. You don't know anything.
I had somebody get out. I was at a gas station, and I was just having one of those days where I was like, don't mess with me because I'm going to go postal.
Totally.
And I gave the wrong girl an attitude because she wanted me to back up my car because she wanted to, you know, do her gas there. And I was like, I was here first. So I did one of those like looks.
Right.
And I was thinking like, oh, you know, I'm gonna get my fight on, you know. Anyway, she got out of the car and she comes up to my window. Wow. On my window. I was like, oh, man, the white girl came out at me. I was like, hey, I'm really sorry.
Yep.
I was just having a bad day. Don't worry about it. You know what? Here's my PIN number. Just pump your gas. So sorry.
It's on me.
Seriously, it's LA. You don't.
Do you know? You are so right. You nailed it right there, sweetheart, because I'm sitting there in this car and I see the door open. And again, it's one of those things where, and basically, I drop a dime on myself. I absolutely participated in this.
Right.
However, it started with him. I'm going down. It was Hazeltine. So I'm going down, and basically, I'm always aware of everybody around me, and I see this guy kind of coming up fast, and I'm like, well, I'm in the left lane. I'll go over to the right, and I'll let him do what he's going to do from the left and just go on, because you're supposed to pass on the left.
Yeah.
So I get over. I'm trying as I
move. But I don't know whether on streets.
Oh, everywhere.
It's the same thing.
It's one thing to. But here's the thing. It's always best. At the very least, if you have the opportunity to go quicker on the left, you go quicker on the left.
Right.
Right. So I put on my directional and I go to go right. And as I do that, does this guy see what's going on and drift out? No. He accelerates and tries to keep me out of the. So we get up to what's now a red light, and he looks back at me and whatever, and I think it then ensued. Then here comes the hand gesture, not fingers, but I mean, like, you know, what are you doing? And you move over, and how you don't, and none of it makes sense. And then sure enough, man, the door opens. And he doesn't get out. He doesn't get out, though. But it was like, you know, but no, here's where it got creepy. Here's where it got creepy, and I had to put on my white girl. was the light turns green, and the freak doesn't move. He sits there and challenges. The light is green, and now he's got his door. You can see he put his car in park, and I'm sitting there. And so now, look, what am I going to do, right?
That's
real creepy and really, you know, awful and not necessary.
Right.
And now he's escalating, and it shows you how – and again, this is all on me. This is me taking responsibility for even engaging this guy in the first place. After that initial thing happened, I should have let it all go. I've got a little girl. I've got a wife. You know, I've got friends and family who love me. You know, whatever I think about myself is second to what these people think about me, and they need me. And so – this guy, I let her, and so, you know, it's one of those things, you don't know if somebody's going to get out with a baseball bat or a gun in this fucked up town with a gun or a knife. You don't fucking know.
Yeah,
it's really, it's...
You know, and I've been one of these people that actually got out of the car a couple times.
Yeah. Are you serious? Oh my God.
Yeah,
he'll rage.
Sambone, man.
Yeah,
rage.
But I don't do that anymore, no. And you know what? I used to do it with the kids in the car,
too.
Oh,
you see?
Man, and they would freak out and shit, you know, so yeah. So I try not to drive a lot.
It's try not to drive. It's not his behavior. He just tries not to drive.
Take myself out of the situation.
He's not going to breathe.
Sam, I noticed you had some shifty eyes, but I wouldn't take you. I wouldn't take you for the guy that let's do it. Let's go town. Pack a lunch.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It is, you know, and it's one of those things where, and so I had to put on my white girl, and like basically I when I saw him do this and now he's not moving at the green light, I'm like, oh my God. I said, okay, just go. I said, let's just go. Let's go. And I actually got him. I put, you know, like the peace hands together, you know, like that namaste thing. I just went, all right, let's just, okay, peace.
You win.
I'm sorry, you, me. Okay, you win. I apologize, you know.
We got to go, yeah.
You know, and it's just, yeah, let's just move on with this thing. You're getting insane. I'm getting insane. And hopefully he had the same moment, you know. Hopefully he had the same thing, too. But, you know, but it's just one of those things where, you know, and that kind of thing doesn't, it happens everywhere. But
I think this city, there's too many things that if you let it, and I'm saying this as somebody that has, just like you, TJ. It's like, if you let it, it can just wear you out. It can wear you out, spit you out, do the cha-cha on you. There's just too many, hurry up and wait, you know, and trying to get, everything's an emergency. Everything's late.
Right.
Everybody's in your way.
Yeah.
Smells.
See, I found out it has to do with how you view things. Mm-hmm. You know, because at a certain point, I've been here for 30. For about 30 years in LA, and you know, I found that there were times where I hated living here.
Mm-hmm.
I really hated it, and I was angry at everything and stuff. And but now I'm okay with it, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask yourself where this anger comes from that we have to take it out on other drivers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, because for you, I think it's like you have that resentment and frustration, and then when it sort of like you have a reason.
I'm already halfway there when I leave the house.
Exactly, and this sort of like justifies, you know, and makes it rational for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
I was right. Look at that motherfucker.
Well, thank you for owning it. Yeah. I mean, that's. That's a big deal to be able to say, you know what? Almost got into a riot today.
Yeah.
It's my issue. Boom. I mean, that's smart. I almost ran over a guy on a bicycle one day.
Wow.
And I mean, it was bad. I was doing a left-hand turn, didn't mm-hmm. see him crossing bicycle, and I was on the phone or texting or something. Really bad. I know.
Right.
So I pulled in. Yeah. I had to get gas. I mean, I don't get away with Jack.
Right.
So I'm about to get gas, and again, another one of those.
Oh man.
And it was the dude on the bicycle. He was like, I was like, listen, I'm really sorry. I'm so mad at myself. This hurt me more than I almost hurt you.
Yeah.
like, you're right. I'm total scum of the earth. I really do apologize. And you know what he did?
Wow.
He goes, I cannot believe you just completely owned that.
Yeah.
He goes, thank you so much, not for almost
really?
Killing me,
yeah.
but
right,
for
right,
actually
right,
apologizing.
Right.
And I was like, thank you, Lord, that I actually was able to pacify. But I really meant it, because it was like one of those things you're like, look, I take me to court too. Please don't, because you're not going to get much. But it kind of pacified the situation. Do you have to be honest, though, you guys?
Yeah.
I mean, 8 years here, not as long as you guys. Mm. And I do think part
of
the...
8 years is a long time, though.
It's, you know, you're getting your feet wet. Things are starting to happen.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a love-hate relationship in L.A. But I think that shows that there's some sobriety going on, because you can see through things. If you're like, I totally love it all the time, then you're kind of wondering, are you seeing through the mess? Are you seeing through the facade?
Yeah.
I've read the best article before I moved here. It said, L.A. is a figment of its own imagination.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I really do... I'm in the really love place again.
You're in a good place.
I love
in your
it
life.
Right now.
Yeah.
I love the hiking. Today's a gorgeous day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, LA's awesome. I really love it. But it's funny when you leave LA, or you travel, you're on the road or whatever. Nobody's talking about LA and its issues as much as LA is,
mm-hmm.
which is true. I mean, it's, you know, it's,
you know, we're gonna be talking about it a lot, and California in general, because you know what's funny, man, is that, you know, they there's a commercial out there, might be for one of the energy companies, I forget, but the commercial starts off, it says, you know, when people think to the future, they think about California. You know, forever we've been, you know, America has looked to California when it came to the future, and I guess, you know, when it
we're
came
so
to
brilliant, right?
The gold rush and oil and you know, aerospace and you know, all the technology for jet fighters and everything came out of Burbank and the Skunk Works there, you know, and there was technology and there was a different whatever. And I tell you what, man, you know, people, I think America can look at California and see where they could be headed in the fucked up sense, too. California over the next couple of years is going to be really seriously, like, dealing with some real serious issues.
Yeah,
because
really.
The first state to almost file bankruptcy?
No, that we did. Well, no, I mean, we did absolutely, yes, almost completely file bankruptcy. But, you know, I mean, there are people in this state who might, again, be getting tax refund checks that are IOUs. They're not actually checked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a year ago, they were issuing IOUs. But everything from illegal immigration to just, you know, taxing people, just tax them. Okay, what are we going to pay for that? Go to the tax in here somehow. Tax them. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This state is in real, like, serious trouble, to the point where I think they're up in Sacramento going, the fuck, man, we are beyond taxing because the people got no more money left. We got nothing to take from them anymore. Take any more and we can't bankrupt their own.
It's getting
California is really, truly, the state now is getting really screwed. And, you know, showbiz, you know, there was a little time there where it seemed like production was coming back home, but boom, it's run away again because they just refused to do the right thing and cut taxes and give incentives to these companies to shoot here and stuff. It just, oh boy, it's gonna be really bumpy here for a while.
Really?
What do you think that it needs at this point? I mean, what is it that you think that would be...
Tax breaks. They have to cut taxes.
Yeah.
They have to cut taxes. They have to make it easy to do business. My wife and
Very
I...
Very bad business climate.
Oh my God. I mean, my wife has a small retail component to her dance school. And, you know, I mean, you know, sales tax is 10% now. You buy a $20,000 car, you're paying $2,000.
They just raised it to 975, right?
That's the thing. And in some spots, it's 10.
Oh, really?
975,
yeah.
985.
In California.
And in certain parts of Los Angeles now, it's 10.
Really?
Because of the state sales taxes, the local sales tax. It's 10% on top of what you buy. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, in other words, to do business, I mean, again, we're in the process of a few things at her business, and it's like, it's just it's so difficult to do business buy the book. Right. You know, there's a lot of those little bodegas and the little cigarette shops. They run to the friggin' table. They don't have one
store
permit.
Brands, yeah.
Yeah, they're completely, you know, oh, come on. And so that's one thing. But you got people doing business legitimately and trying to do everything above board and to the letter.
And they're getting penalized.
They're getting totally banged. And so... You know, I think they just need to. I'm a conservative, so I believe cutting taxes is where you got to start 9 times out of 10 anyway. I'll admit that. But you know, California, I don't know, man. We got to crack down, and I don't know what the hell we're gonna do. But it's creepy in general.
Yeah, it's intense.
Yeah, yeah.
Very intense.
Yeah. Well, God, I love that dress.
Yeah. You're driving him crazy. See, that's why he stayed.
No. Insane. And you can tell, but with that, the little things you do, that you really are a lovely singer.
Well, thank you, DJ. I'm a singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love singing. In fact, I do stand-up comedy, and I bring a lot of the music into it and do a lot of impersonations of pop stars. And
really?
Yeah, I do.
Wow. You're going to have to do that for us sometime.
Well, if you insist. But absolutely. I love doing impersonations of people.
Who's like your favorite, three that you like to do?
Well, some of them you'll have to see live because there's a lot of physical comedy in them. But one of the setups to some of the impersonations are that most of the pop singers nowadays, they're not really singers, they're breathers.
Oh, very funny.
And Jessica Simpson, I don't know if you're familiar with the way she sounds, but this is what she sounds like. She starts off, she's like, nothing but a t-shirt on. I've never felt more beautiful, baby, it's out till now. Now that I'm with you.
I am not an easy laugh when it comes to other comics. I generally don't like other comics personally.
No, I get it.
I've been in comedy for all the, and I have maybe 3 comedian friends. That was a genuine laugh.
TJ.
That was funny.
Do you know what I mean? They're breathers.
Yeah, that it is very funny.
It's very
but you do it. It's very sexy when you do it though.
Yeah,
and
plus
being
you
funny.
Can sing.
I'm not
you can tell you can sing.
I'm not being obnoxious, and I'm not
can
trying
carry
to
carry a tune.
I'm not trying to do a morning zoo thing here keep referring to the sexy, but that breathing thing is really sexy.
Well, it's true.
It's true.
It's true.
God,
I'm sexy, but
damn it,
you know. But no, I've noticed that a lot of the music and is very orgasmy. Have you noticed that?
Go ahead, do it.
Okay.
What the fuck?
Why? I don't want to blow out your mic.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It's just gratuitous. It's like and then some of these girls can sing like Leona Lewis. You know that song? Keep bleeding love.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is like, I'm gonna try not to blow out your microphone, Sarah, because she gets just like.
Yeah, why don't you pull it down just in case?
Okay,
just in case she get ready.
Closed up from love, I couldn't in the past. Once the past was enough, but it was out. I'm in there, dad, I'm telling you, close
orgasmic is a good way to describe it.
Yeah. I'm not trying. I did a corporate gig.
Very good. All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You did a corporate gig? You did a corporate gig?
Yeah. No, I did a little corporate gig, and they shouldn't have hired me, and I should have seen that it wasn't a good fit. But it was back in Texas, and it was a very conservative Christian church type thing. And I'm a Christian, and I think God's got a sense of humor. And you know, I don't believe the whole like sexual oppression thing. It's funny, but you know, a lot of the stuff I do is part of it, not the whole thing. Part of it's like faux sexy. It's playful, and it's
for
not.
Sure,
I'm not trying to turn you on.
Doing
like Shakira. You know what
I
mean?
Right.
It's funny.
Hey, you be good to Shakira. I
ain't gonna lie, okay, mama can work it, okay,
work
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, I mean, it's funny, but some people, they're like, not laughing as much. And I was like, and my friend was like, yeah, it's a little risky for some of, you know.
Yeah.
Some of those places, it's just a little too, it's a little bit, you know, safer. So
I guess it depends on the venue, wherever you are, that's how you
I'm
have to adjust.
I'm a clean comic, I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
You'll get 1,000 miles further being a clean comic. There's plenty of time to be blue. There's plenty of time later in your career.
This is not my thing. It's just, you know, do what your thing is and what's natural.
I mean, ultimately, look, I mean, that's what being a professional is all about when it comes to comedy is that, you know, eventually you got to work a room. And there are going to be times when, you know, people are going to expect you to be a certain level of blue.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you show up and, you know, but one thing I learned is that you can always dirty it up if you need to.
Yeah.
And too many comics out there, if I see, you know, when I'll hit a room these days, I'll for whatever reason, and like, you know, if I see one more Filipino kid standing there talking like, oh yeah, 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 so we're doing comedy up in the house here, up in the motherfucker, yeah, so, you know, my name is, you know, my name is Daniel Choi, yo.
That's true.
Go to DanielChoi.com, my MySpace page, and motherfucker. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you're a goddamn, you're a chink, and you're talking, and you know, and it, with the hip hop, and it's just, it's so fun. But the cursing and the curse, and you see, and I curse like a sailor. In real life, I curse more in real life than I've ever on stage, and it's just because I express myself, whatever. And but when I, but growing up, the as a comic, growing up, it's funny, I literally use that term. Coming up, man, some of the most invaluable advice I got was about the clean. It was about the clean, and it was
just
for no
more
reason.
Accessible, I guess.
It makes you more accessible. Makes you more. You're able generic. To appeal to a broader spectrum.
Yeah.
And again, you can always add a layer of blue. You can always add a little.
That's
you
true.
Know what I'm noticing? I'm noticing though, in like the LA comedy scene, and not that I'm that plugged in, but you know, I'm noticing that like what's in is to be very, very jaded.
Absolutely.
And like, it's not cool to be happy.
Right.
So I started noticing, I was like,
that's been for a while now.
Yeah.
Interesting,
I'm like,
interesting.
Been,
go ahead.
Well, I've been trying to tone it down, like trying to fit in the club. Mm-hmm. I just came to the realization I'm never going to fit in the comedy club. I do great on stage. I kill it. People love me. But as far as fitting into the club, it's just not going to happen because I'm freaking happy, man.
Yeah. Right.
It's just not cool.
Yeah, no, it's not cool. And the thing is, it's all about being guarded and
a
lot. And it does actually translate to the stage as well. You do have a lot of people that are very jaded up there, and the thing is because the other thing too is that you have a lot of people doing comedy. Don't forget, you have a lot of people doing comedy that have no business doing comedy.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
They're not funny at all. And I'm talking, it's not even just on in the subjective sense.
Right.
They are objectively, they are not funny. I mean, yeah. funny is yeah. funny. Everybody has their vision of beauty, right? Okay. There are some people who dig the Rubenesque and some people who dig the heroin chic, waif.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, but then again, there's nobody who'll deny that I don't know. I mean,
some stuff is
give me, you know, that Heidi Klum is beautiful. I mean, there's nobody who would ever say that Heidi Klum is beautiful. You know, but then again, you got people who say Catherine McPhee is where it begins and ends, and you got people who say that Shakira is. But, you know, I mean, but then you have classic beauty that just goes through the ages, and beautiful is beautiful is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Funny is funny is funny. And whether like you like political or you like this or that, or but anyway, the point is that you've got people. I think a massive part of comedy is a connection with the audience.
Oh, yeah.
And what happens is when you are up there forcing and maintaining a disconnect from the audience, that jaded sort of, you know, not reaching over and touching those people, that to me is a sign of just you don't belong up there.
Yeah,
I'm not quite expressing it
it's,
right.
Well, I find that I'm seeing it's like who can be the bigger a-hole and who can intimidate the audience and, you know, intimidate the audience to laugh at you. And it's not so much about serving and giving and trying. Like people that are going to see comedy, they really want to laugh. They're already on your side. They're paying money.
Generally. Yeah.
And give them something, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, don't make it all about, you know, it's just, I'm jaded by
true.
The jadedness.
That's and sometimes you wonder why these people even go up there, you know, do they really think they're funny? You know, because they go up there, nobody laughs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and you wonder why they even let them on that stage.
It's like a club. It's not even about so much sometimes the audience. It's about who likes who and who fits in with who. And I think that's with a lot of different industries. But, yeah, it just gets old. It's tiring. I feel – it's just like you, TJ. I feel wore out watching most comedy. Not in a good way. Not in a good way, but I'm like
– And you know what, man? And I tell you what.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, that's the thing, too, is that – and I've said this before, but when it comes to comedy – when I started, there was the goal of every guy and the couple of girls that I started with. The goal was every single night, no matter what the venue, and I also have to be honest and acknowledge the fact that when I started, open mic nights were. There was a cover and a two drink minimum. People paid to come in, the public, and we would some. There were some places that did a 7 and a 10.
Oh wow!
On open mic night, okay.
Right.
So I mean, it was different. There was a paying audience, etc. Anyway, the goal was to kill. And the thing is, too, is that the definition of killing was destroying the room. Mm. Killing. People begging you to stop. as an amateur, even though you knew you didn't have it yet, even though you knew that you weren't capable of that yet.
That was the goal.
That was the goal. And now, it wasn't like it was a failure. It's not like, you know, I mean, look, it was kind of like the way the Yankees look at a season. It's like, unless we win the World Series, we didn't accomplish our goal. Now, look, is it a total failure? Was it a total waste of time if we only make it to the playoffs? Kind of, but still you acknowledge it was a hell of an effort and there might have been things along the way. But still, the goal is to win the World Series. The goal was to kill. And killing meant people banging on the tables. Today,
love it.
That is not...
Nobody's that funny anymore.
A, that's not the definition of killing.
Right.
Today, you get a smattering of... that's killing.
Okay.
Killing, well, I mean, I have... And thank you, God, for giving me the gifts that manifested themselves to the point where I've had the experience many, many times of people sitting there and mouthing the words, stop, stop.
Really?
And tears. That
I'd love to see
I've
you
experienced
doing stand up,
that.
You
I've
know?
Experienced
You've
it. And I can never, I mean, and I can picture these couple, every time I tell this, I talk about this. There's about three women that go through my mind and a couple of fellas that I always picture in my mind's eye doing that. But to see somebody bending over into their date's lap and or arms and just begging, looking, then looking up and going, oh, please stop. And the thing is that I didn't. I kept going. It's like a Scorsese thing when Jimmy Conway and Tommy are kicking the shit out of the guy in the bar in Goodfellas and De Niro is making that face and he's kicking the shot from the ground, looking up at De Niro just kicking and kicking. That's what I would do. They begged me to stop and I said, now you're gonna get more. And this is where God comes into it. Everything that came out of my mouth made them laugh even harder and harder and harder. That's killing.
Yeah. DJ, if you're that funny, I insist you go back to stand-up. Just so I can see you, man.
Something happened, and I'm in the middle of figuring out why. You said sobriety earlier. I don't know if you're actually sober. I mean, but I had to quit drinking.
Right now, yeah.
That's my thing, is that, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Okay. And so something there, Sammy knows this. We've become dear friends. Something happened, and I'm still trying to get to the root of it, but something happened along the way in between being a drunk and getting sober that I honest radio is the best radio, just like honest comedy is best comedy. I still don't quite know what needs to flip back again.
Right, but you lost the mojo pretty much.
And I would say mojo is a good way to put it because I don't know. It's not fear. Mm-hmm. It's not confidence, but it's fear. It's confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something that is not there because, and it's a conundrum because how can I go from being not just it being the only thing I did, but I did it so well and had such a career. I was just in the last show while I was on, I was actually looking at an old news clipping that's now on the internet. I didn't know it was there from when I was at the Montreal Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, I was there, man. Mm-hmm. How is it that I'm not, I mean, I'm just right now, I'm not capable of doing what I used to do.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. And it's part of this process. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you have the desire to want to be back on stage?
I gotta say that sometimes I say no because of what I'm talking about here, but really, to be totally brutally honest, yes, I really desperately do.
Like if it came easily, you'd want to do it. You know what I'm wondering though is that, you know, with some things, because I feel like that often, you know, where I really want, I know I should do something, but I don't really do it. And I think the best thing is just to do it, you know, to not think about it, but just do it.
Mm. You're right. First of all,
we make ourselves crazy thinking about things, you know?
Like you don't know until you just see what it
is. And I have done stand up, but in a handful of times in sobriety and even over the last calendar year. I mean, even over the last 6 months, I've actually gone and done a couple of appearances. But what they were paid performances and stuff. I got paid audience and everything. Not bringer shows or anything like that. But what they set amounted to was me talking very funny and very glib, and I did very, very well. I was funny, and they really enjoyed me. But I was talking about kind of just recent events in my life and whatever. It wasn't my old act. And that's the thing. If I don't have the courage, maybe I see living out loud, you tend to uncover things. As I talk to you guys, what I'm kind of thinking here is that, you know, I think maybe the courage or the fear factor here is that in the sense that maybe I don't... epiphany. Hold on a minute. I'm serious. You know, this is interesting. You know, one of the hallmarks of my alcoholism is that I went through almost my entire career, and I didn't start drinking until later in life, but I lived very alcoholically forever. One of the things that I realized looking back is that I never really believed in myself. I always felt that I was a fraud. I always felt like I was waiting, even as I was killing an audience, as I destroying them in exactly the way I was just describing. If someone, that person who was begging me to stop, in my mind, in the nanoseconds of thought that were flying, any given moment, another thought would be, keep going, because at some point, she may realize that you're not this good.
I see, yeah.
Oh.
You see,
she may realize that you're not this good. I am a fucking fraud.
Right.
And I would come off stage, and would I wrap myself in that blanket of good feeling? No, I'd walk off that stage, and I'd maybe have a few moments of king of the world, but then I would come back to the reality that was my sick head, and I'd be thinking, got away with another one.
Yeah.
Well, do you think maybe it's reinventing, you know, in a way?
Which is the process that's been happening here.
Yeah.
I mean, I have moved over to another realm, the realm of media and political punditry and Fox News and all this amazing stuff that I do here from 7 to 9, Monday through Friday. You know, yeah, a bit. Of, well, sure. You get sober and you kind of learn life all over again. You know, you learn right from wrong and good from bad. You know, and you suddenly, you know, when you're 5 years sober, you're kind of operating at a 5-year-old level when it comes to good and bad and right and wrong and learning and all. But still, there's something that just it goes beyond just sobriety and stuff to try to figure out what exactly is keeping me from doing
what
it
need
is that identified
some hypnotherapy
me.
Or something.
Did Dina tell you? No.
But we had
I slept
a hypnotherapist.
With Dina. She didn't
here.
Tell you.
No.
I slept with her.
It
finally happened.
Well, that's where she was yesterday on Valentine's Day. I could
remember
figure
I called
it out.
You. You said you want to get coffee. I was trying to get you to go to Starbucks. Give me 10 minutes. Oh God, that's so tacky. What a bad joke. Dina. Sam's better half. Dina has a dear friend who's actually a guest on your show.
Right, exactly. She's a hypnotherapist. And I think that it works. I really do.
Have you ever
tried that before?
No, I haven't, actually.
Because it goes into your subconsciousness, you know? So it's like,
I think that's where this thing is.
Yeah.
I think that's what this thing is. And put it this way. I've tried everything that sobriety gives me. I've tried all those tools.
Right.
And Lord knows, it's fixed a marriage. It's given us our first baby, all these tools.
Mm.
Has it gotten me back on stage doing a living, making a living, doing what I did so much better than so many other people? No, I'm still not doing that.
Right.
And I don't.
Right.
So there's.
So something's
it may
blocking
just be
you.
Timing. It may just be like a healing process and a time, rebuilding. And
possibly, sweetheart.
You know?
Something's
there's no shame
you.
In that. There's no, there's no shame in going, you know what?
Yeah.
I was really awesome. I'm still good, not at the same level, but maybe it's going to look different now and be better.
Yeah.
And be much, much better than you can imagine.
Yeah, you know, I guess. And again, it's like, it's one of those things, too, where you go, you know, you can easily draw the connected dots between I was a fraud, you know, I felt like I was a fraud, and having any confidence in that material, which really taken on its own, it was great material. I had a great act.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, maybe I just need to, you know, I don't know, but I think I'm willing to turn over really any and all stones, and so hypnotherapy is one of the ones that I have not tried yet.
Yeah,
I it's worth a shot, you know, especially if she'll do it for free.
Maybe if you make her laugh hard enough,
she
won't
right?
charge you for it.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. Yeah, well, God, if I can tell her, she'll be laughing either at me or with me, one or the other. She'll be laughing.
I think the fraud thing, and not to diminish what you're saying, but I think that the fraud thing is, it's such an innate part, I think, of all of us as humans, because I think that anytime, you do something creative or tell a joke or you write a song or whatever, it's like there is a risk involved where you're going, I think this has an ability to be funny and make people laugh or move them or whatever, but I really don't know.
I thought
here
of this.
Go.
It's awesome. Here. React positively.
Yeah. And sometimes you know, you reveal yourself. You're vulnerable. Doesn't translate. People don't get it. Or people are like, that's the most funny thing I've ever heard. You're amazing. And you're like, really, I'm amazing? Oh, my gosh. I just thought about that. So I think that there's that
she's awesome.
Leap of faith thing that I just really think is it does. I try to explain this to people that, you know, I do comedy and stuff, and they just think they're like, Kara, you never get embarrassed, or you never whatever. And I'm like, oh, please. I'm like, it's not about confidence, in my opinion. It's not so much about confidence in me, because we're all just human. We're all fallible. We're all imperfect. We're all whatever. Fill in the blank. But to me, it's like, it's about courage. It's about not about, oh, I'm great, but I see that there's potential here, and I'm going to drive it home, and I'm going to take that leap of faith, and I'm just going to fight the nerves, fight the insecurity. And then what that looks like on the other end of people is, wow, this is such a great experience. How did they do that? And you're like, you know what? And I believe in God, and I just really go to God with it all. And I'm like, you know what? Give it to me. Don't give it to me. Help me out here. Empty me. You know, fuel
thy
me.
Thy will be done.
Really, like, just because I think it brings us to our knees. It's humility to go, you know what? There's something great inside of me, and I don't have complete control over it. Right. You know?
There you go. There you go. 12 steps.
Yeah, man, right?
The serenity.
What a
freaking
exhausting life I am. So honest. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You know what? You know, again, it's like that to me, and that, by the way, that was the hallmark to every... Once my act took off was when I just started being honest with people. Mm. And when you start telling the truth, I mean, I rarely really made anything up. And I've expressed this to people. I say, you know, I say, look, comics ever ask me advice, you know, or whatever, I always say, look, you want one thing that's a key and a major eye contact. Man, you make eye contact with that audience, whether or not you're telling the truth. Look, if you're the kind of comic like me who tells stories, tells the truth, it's, if you don't do it, you're totally fucked. But if even just any kind of comic with any kind of act or material, whatever the style, if you make eye contact, you see, what that is, that it just inherently, that makes that connection, makes you more believable. Because whether or not you're making shit up or not, you need people to believe you. You need people to invest in you. Right. And eye contact goes so far in every other aspect of human interaction. When it comes to stand-up, you make eye contact. And I tell you what, man, it got to the point where, I mean, it was... I started with this act where I started just talking about me and my life, and then one or two nights, you know, you have those benchmark moments, those milestones that you come across, and something will just change incredibly. Like the first night that you really beat a heckler really well, and like from there on, it's like you never worry about a heckler again. But I remember the first night that I was telling a story about a girl breaking up with me, and it was this couple in the front row, and they kind of reminded me of me and this girl that had broken up, and I just started talking to them, and I just started, there's the mic, and I started talking, and I started looking and leaning, and put my hand up, and I was trying to explain to them exactly what I was explaining to them, and all this stuff, and whatever, and the way they looked at me, and the way that I knew I was expressing a conviction, and they believed me, and the audience believed me, and something happened.
Yeah.
From that moment on, I spent the next, what, at that point, maybe 20 years, I could play I could play 3,000 seats at Caesar's Palace, and I could be looking at, if they were within the lights, because, you know, it gets to a point where you just can't see, but if you were within the lights, I would probably make eye contact with everybody that I could see.
Really?
Subconsciously, to some degree.
That's
cool. But you got to do it, because when you talk to people, you know, you got to make that eye contact.
Sure.
And that's what you're doing. You're talking to them.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And you're trying to elicit a reaction, and that reaction is based on so many things. It's almost, you know, stand-up is almost like every single aspect of human interaction in one shot. Everything about human relations is kind of wrapped up in
it
one
is,
minute of stand-up comedy. It's about belief. It's about trust. Mm. It's about risk-taking. It's about love. It's about hate. It's about friendship. It's about communicating. It's about being clear. It's about, you know, offending and not offending and pushing the line. All within the exact, like, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
You have an instant of a thought, and that thought is going to either offend or not offend. You want it to offend or not. I mean, all these decisions are happening, and then it comes out, and then it comes back to you, and all of that in the process of a split second.
Right.
You know?
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All that communication So quick.
Exactly. And that's here. It's me, Bobby Chan, y'all motherfuckers. we up in the house here at the in the belly room. And you motherfuckers are going to be laughing at my motherfucking shit. Yeah. My mother, she, my mother Korean, my daddy, he be a Filipino motherfucker. And we be eating rice. What's up with the rice, y'all? What's up with all the rice? I don't know. Holler back at me. Motherfuckers. Yeah. That's not fucking comedy.
Anyway, we beat this to death, man. Just quickly.
That's comedy, too. Beating it to death, baby.
How was Valentine's Day for a married man with a baby?
It was sweet and simple. Wait, you got to add a word in there, too. A broke married, formerly incredibly well-paid, very wealthy married man. The fact that I'm still married is a blessing because, you know, probably the reason that I'm not rolling in dough like I used to is because I am sober and I've made different choices now.
Right.
But, you know, it was simple, man. You know, it was quiet, and you know, instead of
you weren't able to go out on anything.
Well, because of the baby. But yeah. You know, it's like it's all about the baby, and it's about.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Andrea doesn't quite buy into the whole. She definitely loves the flowers and loves the thought and all this stuff.
Right.
And so you know, but like instead of roses, because look, she also doesn't like the sucked into. Mentality.
Yeah.
So like when I came home, a lot of people
I think are opposed to that. And
it's
stuff.
More and more.
And I've been like that too, you know.
Consumerism,
but then,
kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. And you say, well, why am I going to give someone just because I'm expected on this day to give something? You know what?
Oh yeah.
But then I realized this year that I've been saying that for a few years, and it doesn't really get me far, you know. So maybe I should actually do something.
Yeah. Then Dina wouldn't have to come running to me every 3 days.
Exactly. So I did the roses and the card. And
oh, good for you.
And we went out to breakfast and stuff, and it was really cool.
It's nice when you do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I feel I actually did what I'm expected to do.
Exactly. And there is something to be said about that, and it goes a long way. Now, do you have a fella lucky enough to be nestling within?
Yeah. you know, I'm actually dating somebody, and I want to divulge deeply. I don't know if he's listening. Do you know what I'm saying right now?
All right.
Yeah. It's okay. We'll leave it for another day.
So basically, he had to work. Uh-huh. I was filming something yesterday, but I did get home around 6 o'clock. He was working, so I was really bummed. I was I was so disappointed. I'm not going to lie.
Uh-huh.
And I know he couldn't help it because he's working, but I was on Facebook, and man, I got hit up hardcore by all the lonely people on Facebook. Like, what are you doing tonight? Why are you just chat? Because you know when you're on Facebook, people see your status if you're online, and they're like, oh yeah, lonely at night, huh? Me too. And nothing creepy, but just all these people came out of the woodworks that were single. And this is like the first Valentine's Day that I've really been dating somebody. And it's still light, it's still new, but I was a little bit disappointed. I know that it was a schedule
because he didn't come through with that.
You know, he couldn't, he was working, but however, I just
well he
say,
could no he could ways. There could have been something
felt,
waiting for you.
Here's the thing. Yeah, I kind of felt
and especially
like,
when it's early too, you know, I mean, you really want to show that
it's more about like I'm not like a thing kind of girl, you know, but it's more about the emotional effort and you know, women are complicated, and it's kind of like if you address that they want to feel special and pretty. And come on, let's be honest. I love a lot of attention. I'm not going to lie.
Sure.
So I need that times 10. It's like my love tank is so not full right now. Come on. So I was feeling, you know, even though it was kind of out of his control, I still felt like the effort wasn't fully made.
All right.
And,
I hope he's listening.
You know, you know what? I think Valentine's Day was made to make men a little more romantic than they usually are. You know, because it is about you know, putting the woman on a pedestal and everything.
A little bit, sure.
But they deserve it. I mean, you know, after all, you know, I just say, okay, consumerism or not. You know,
sure, you might
it,
look
you
when
know.
In Rome, right? It's you not, jump
yeah,
in and
exactly.
you do it.
It's not worth the argument. You know?
No.
Yeah, you know, and it's really funny because I saw somebody wrote on their Facebook update. They were like, happy Singles Awareness Day.
Oh, funny.
It's funny when you have somebody you want to flaunt it on that day. You're like, yeah, bouquet of roses, and we're going to go to a movie, and we're going to eat a lot, and chocolates, and whatever.
Yeah.
And then the person that's single is like, it's consumerism.
Happy
you know, and
fucking Hallmark holiday.
Whatever, I love myself. And so, but no, it's funny. So it was a weird Valentine's Day because I actually had an opportunity to be that person to throw it in someone's face and yet didn't get a chance.
Wow. Well, opportunity for you and to grow, I guess. Is he in the industry?
No, he's in the military, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
He had to defend. look at missiles or something like that. I don't know.
Really?
Do push-ups. I don't know.
I see. Okay.
He had a, you know, I've been trying to go visit him. Like, yeah. I've been like, hey, can I come up and just, like, watch you do man stuff and, like, you know.
Like, come on the base and, like,
yeah,
watch him?
Yeah. I kind of want to see. Come on. You know, first of all, it's L.A. Most of the guys here are, you know, totally not straight. Or if they're straight, they still seem not straight. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right, right, yeah.
So it's like, you know, a man wearing, like, fatigues and doing one-arm push-ups. I got to tell you, that kind of turns me on. And I'd like to see him, you know, not shoot a person, but maybe, you know, like a bush or something. Yeah. Does that make sense?
I need to see him shooting
something. First of all, I'm going to go to the Army Navy store and buy myself a jacket.
Do you know what I'm saying? Just that, like,
get some fatigues.
Yeah.
Ultra masculine, like, defending people.
Yeah, I can see that.
And Davis,
I can see that.
And, you know, I'm all getting hot thinking about it right now.
You know
now.
What? I tell you what. You know what's funny is, you know, the other night, I got to admit, the other night, I actually, because I really am, look, I was a metrosexual well before the term metrosexual came
really?
Out. I've always been half a fag. But I definitely have my moments where I can really, if I get really super charged up in terms of horny and stuff like that, I will sort of flip it and actually get kind of in charge. And I got to tell you, my wife, Andrew, she
loves
is
it.
Putty in my hands. And I swear to God, the other night, Saturday night, I came home and I just, I was, and it was, and it's kind of out of character recently. I've just been distracted and stressed. And, but you know, I tell you, I told her what the fuck to do right there in the fucking living room.
Oh my God. Is she listening?
I think she's actually listening right now. She'll tell you, I was fucking awesome. And,
she knows who she's married to.
I texted her. Texted her and said, I said, tonight we're fucking. And she texts back. She goes, you could almost tell the quivering in her hand in messenger.
Wow.
Back.
Oh,
And I came home and right there and a boom right there in the living room, and I said, do this and take that.
Wow.
Nice, man.
And I tell you what, I mean, first of all, I was impressed with myself because I actually, you know, I didn't get her a Valentine's card.
I gotta tell you, man, this morning I wake up, I went to sleep a little earlier than my wife last night, which is not usually the case, but I did because I was very tired. I wake up this morning and my whole bathroom is full of rose petals and everything, and a card and with lipstick, I love you on the mirror. And
holy shit!
I know.
Are
I mean,
you serious?
Yeah.
She's sweet. What did you get for her, Sam?
I got for her roses and a card, I took her out to breakfast on Sunset.
Wow,
which was very nice.
Which go to the grill?
No, actually, we went. No, not to Sunset Grill, but there's a place called. You know what? I can't even remember the name of it.
Nice breakfast.
But like Sunset Plaza.
Those outdoor places. Yeah. That's nice.
And then
stuff.
We went and she bought me some Armani exchange clothes
and
stuff. So that was cool.
Nice.
So it turned out to be nice. I mean, I'm capable.
And this shows you what a pain in the ass I am. I'd get up and go, you know how long it's going to take me to clean up these rose petals?
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
That's where my head
I was like that too, believe me. That was my first thought.
I'm like, what a mess.
I just don't think romance for women is the same for men. I mean, I just don't expect rose petals to turn a guy on.
Right.
Right? Yeah. He's going to be like, okay, it's a flower. Like, I'm not into it. If they left, I don't know, what would they need to leave? Like, tools, DVDs hanging around?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
You need to have, like, you know, like, tape measure? Or
can I ask, you know what?
Last question because I have a guest waiting.
Oh, if you have a guest waiting, we can do it some other time.
It can wait.
TJ, you're hysterical.
It was a good question. I'll ask it next time.
And, you had to go through the TJ test, and I think you
passed.
Well,
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you're very funny. Very funny.
And so you're going to be seeing TJ every day because TJ is on the station from 7 to 9 every morning on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And very cool show. Very cool show. I like getting up in the morning at 7. And
today I had a report from Haiti.
Did you really?
I had Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service based in Washington. She was actually on the road in Haiti traveling from one part of Port-au-Prince to the other. So she calls in every day with you know, the news from Washington. But right now she's actually in Haiti doing correspondence from there. So she calls. So we had a live report from Haiti this morning. And so tomorrow I got a couple of liberals coming on tomorrow.
Oh really?
That
should be interesting.
Get to mix it up a little bit.
All right, TJ. And thank you. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back right after this.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone. Commercial-free, original talk. Only on LA Talk Radio. your favorite talk station.
Now let's get back to Sam in the Morning right here on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and thanks for staying with us. Our guest is not here yet. I don't know where she is.
It happens. It's L.A., right?
It's factor. L.A. Yeah.
Flake factor. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
What are you going to do, you know? I mean, I can understand when a porn star doesn't show up, but...
Yeah.
Because they tend to not show up.
Oh, really? Is it like a low show ratio?
Something like that, yeah. I guess they... They don't feel they need to be everywhere on time.
You know what? I've heard that said. In L.A., like we said, you can kind of get away with it. I mean, you know, your doctor's not there. You know, if you have a doctor, friends, everything. It's just kind of like,
Traffic.
Blame it
traffic.
On L.A. You can blame so much on this town.
That's true, huh? People do
that. I've cashed in on it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Cashed in on it. So TJ's intense.
TJ is intense.
He's an intense little dude.
Yes.
He's funny,
got
though.
Opinions.
I appreciate somebody that, you know, at least they're honest.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's very honest. You know,
I really like that.
And you need to be honest on radio, you know, otherwise people don't connect with you, you
That's
know.
That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I totally hear you.
So you mentioned you like hiking, huh?
I do like hiking. And Sam, I don't know if I'm sure you've heard about it. I went hiking the other day because I live at the bottom of the Hollywood Hills, not in the Hollywood Hills, but at the bottom. And I can go hiking and be up near the Hollywood sign.
Yeah,
so I was hiking the other day feeling all healthy and thin and I was having a skinny day and I looked and I saw the Hollywood sign is covered up. Have you seen that?
Really?
Yeah, it's called Save the Place. I'm sorry, Save the Peaks. Have you seen that?
No.
Have you heard about it? No.
They covered up the whole sign?
They covered each letter up with kind of like a tarp, and it now reads Save the Peaks, because right now, you know, that land was originally owned by Howard Hughes, and now it's up for, you know, like the trustees or the people that were in charge of it kind of let it lapse, and so it's up to being sold and built into real estate.
Really?
Yeah, they're trying to basically develop it and put in these really awesome homes.
Right.
And so now they're kind of putting this effort out and this, you know, basically... You know, public service announcement, like, you know, Save the Peaks.
Right.
Let's keep it Hollywood and, you know, keep it open and the view open and not real estate. So it's kind of a divided subject right now. I mean, what do you think about, you know, there being houses up there and maybe the sign will be there, maybe it won't.
Yeah. I mean, are they thinking of removing the sign? I can't imagine that anybody
I don't know
would
about removing the sign, but instead of it being open, you know, it's such a kind of like a historic and, you know, landmark trademark thing on all postcards. But now it would be not just, you know, the Hollywood sign with a bunch of greenery and, you know, mountains around it. It would be...
Like houses all
somebody
over the place.
In their somebody in their you know backyard and in their pool and then the Hollywood sign, you know.
Right.
And personally, like my roommate's like, she goes, you know, I don't know what the big deal is. She's like, originally that's why they made it Hollywood. It was originally Hollywood land, and it was supposed to be all like developed and real estate. And then Howard Hughes, you know, he totally bought it and kind of kept it, you know, to himself. And but the original idea was for it to be this big, you know, developed.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, but so I personally like it open, and I like it just Hollywood, boom, and then just, you know.
Yeah.
It's like we have
there's
houses,
there's
right?
a lot of hiking trails there and stuff.
Oh, man, it's so beautiful.
Really?
It's so good.
Are there a lot of people hiking there?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's right there in the Hollywood area, Hollywood Hills. And so, you know, you can literally just start going up, like, neighborhoods, or you can go through Griffith Park, and you can just, you know, start doing your little hike, and there's a lot of people. It's not as busy as, like, Runyon Canyon.
Okay.
Runyon Canyon's a little bit more hip in L.A. It's where people bring their chihuahuas and their lattes.
I see.
I'm serious, Sam.
And
serious.
They hike with the chihuahuas and the lattes.
And a latte and a cigarette, in case you need a cigarette break.
Yeah.
And they're on the cell phone. I mean, I saw the funniest thing one day. I was hiking, and this is when I was new to L.A. I was hiking at Runyon Canyon. Literally, I'm not even lying. Literally, I was hiking up, and on the other way, on the opposite side, coming down, I saw a man... who only had like jams, you know, like he had like swimming trunks on.
Really?
And no shirt. And then he had his neck in a cast connected to his arm.
Really?
Like an arm brace. And he's hiking and he can barely move. But he's like, oh, I got to burn my calories.
Yeah.
And then right behind him, which was not with him, but just happened to be right behind him, was a girl hiking in a bikini only and tennis shoes. And I just thought, man, where's the camera?
Yeah.
Like only in L.A. It'd be like, welcome to L.A. And the guy, you know, trying to hike and he can't, you know, with his orange tan and like a neck brace. It's like... ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Do you hike though? Do you get out?
I'd love to, but I don't. No. I don't know where to go. You know.
You know, there's
so
many. Where do you live again? What area?
Right here.
Oh, in
down the street.
Oaks?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's so many. There's Fryman Canyon around the corner.
Really?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. He's like, really?
I need to explore that stuff, yeah.
I think it makes L.A. bigger and more fun, and you're not so, like, stuck in the traffic. You're, like, elevated. You're up. You've got a great skyline.
Plus, I miss being in nature, you know. When I was growing up and stuff, we were outside all the time, you know. And I remember the flowers, the smell of the flowers and, you know, and the bushes and and all that. And, you know, the little animals running around and stuff. So, yeah, I miss that. I think I should start doing
that.
No,
you totally need to. Because, you know, when I go back to Texas or I go back to the Houston area, it's so flat and I forget. It's like I know a mountain's not going to grow up overnight, but I go back and I'm like, wait a minute. What's going on here?
Nowhere
it's
to go.
Flat. And I'm like, you feel that need and that itching to get out. But Yeah, I just think we live in, like, one of the most beautiful states, and take advantage
of it. It is beautiful. You know, I mean, we've got great weather and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's summer today, you know, and yesterday was, like, 80 degrees or something, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was 81.
So, there, you know, so like I was saying before, you know, when TJ was talking about the city and stuff, is that, yes, there's a lot of bad stuff here, too, but it depends on how you look at it,
you know,
and it took me a long time to figure it out, and I realized that, you know, I mean, there's great things about L.A. as well, you know, that you couldn't get
there's
in a smaller town.
Listen, here's what I'm saying. Is that there's a lot of this I'm over the city type attitude, and I get it. And there's good reasons. But I'm just like, we're living in a place where, it's like being jaded is hip. Everybody's like anti-America, and it's like, you know, just the attitude of like, this is not. And I'm like, just then leave or shut up or whatever. Like, go somewhere else. You know, that's what I think. And, you know, it's one thing to address, you know, aspects of the city, like the traffic or stuff that's irritating. And I appreciate it. I think it's funny. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, then go to Middle America or something. And not that those places aren't great in their own way. But, I mean, there's just so many things you don't have.
Right.
There's so much you don't have. You don't have the diversity. You don't have an internet cafe. You know, you don't have Jewish people. You know, it's like there's just so much here. But I guess there's just different stages in people's lives when they're just ready to just go live in a hut somewhere on a lake and, you know, flat screen TV.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but, I mean, you find different things in L.A. People come here for different reasons and
stuff, like,
you know?
Plastic surgery. Yeah. You know?
There you go. You know, I mean, and we were on Sunset yesterday having breakfast and stuff, and you get to see all these characters and stuff.
Oh, man.
And, you know, all the surgery and stuff on these
and
women.
And you don't have to pay to see the show.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay. You just walk outside. It's so
And these
fun.
People look ridiculous, you know, with the swollen lips and
the
chiseled
looks,
nose.
Man.
And it is. It is.
It's like,
and it's always the older women, you know, that look like shit. They look like monsters.
Can we bring up Heidi Montag? Have you seen her new face?
No, I don't even know who that is.
Heidi and Spencer Pratt.
Oh, Heidi. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Heidi.
That one. Okay.
She's 23.
Uh-huh.
Went under the knife. This is her, I think, second or third operation, but had 10 procedures.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. And she's 23?
23.
Wow.
And here's the thing. I mean, from beginning to now, if this is the end, she does look dramatically different. I mean, she looks like a different person. Not
really?
Recognizable.
Yeah.
But this girl was already an attractive girl. Then she had her first set of operations done, and she tweaked some stuff, and she did look very different, but she still looked like herself, and she's attractive, you know, really beautiful. And now this second or third go around, she's had 10 procedures done. Like, she had like her ears pinned back. She actually had, no, I'm serious. She actually had part of her bone in her back and muscle removed to create more of an hourglass. So it cinched in more.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is ridiculous. You're 23. Where do you go from here?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
Yeah, and I mean, how can you find so many flaws with your body?
I mean, it's L.A. You know? I mean, you're taught to hate yourself, let's be honest. But it's so crazy. I'm like, you were already attractive. But I just think my theory here, especially for women, is when you don't know what your purpose is, when you don't know if you have talent or what it is, just get skinny. Just get pretty. It's like it's the one thing people feel like they can control, which is the way that they look. And it's like, but maybe that's still not going to be enough, because at the end of the day, you're still going to lose this. Maybe, you know, I mean, I don't know what happens to silicone over years, but, you know, some stuff is going to sag and some stuff isn't going to keep its place. And, you know.
Yeah, and you end up looking ridiculous, you know, with these, again, those big lips and stuff that, you know, that chiseled nose that looks like shit, you know? And,
I don't know.
So it does happen a lot here. And if you want to see that, you go to the city, like on Sunset and stuff, and you see all these people that try to be somebody else, you know?
And it seems like that somebody else all looks like they're all trying to be that the same somebody
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
It's like the fish same. Lips that you flip them outside and right. smack them on and like want to be Angelina Jolie. We also call it tits on a stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, girls that yeah. you know that they're, you know, I'm sorry, ladies. Boobs are for people that eat, okay? And boobs are for people that, you know what, they eat and they okay, okay. And it's like you see these girls that, you know, you didn't earn those boobs. You didn't yeah. eat a sandwich because their body weight can't even support it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the skin is stretched. Everything's taut.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the big lips and the boobs, and it's just like, oh, give me a break. But, yeah. you know, but I got to be honest. This is very hypocritical as I say this right now. I looked at Heidi Montag, mm-hmm. and everybody's saying, oh, my gosh, she looks so fake. She doesn't. Blah, blah, blah. And she does. She looks like a completely different person. But you're going to have to look at it later, everybody. But I don't think I think her face looks good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I hate to admit it because I was like, oh, my gosh, it's so bad. She looks so bad. Oh, wait a minute. Her eyes actually look good.
Yeah.
Her hair is so pretty.
Uh-huh.
Man, so yeah,
so
I feel
maybe
kind
it does
of,
work, huh?
I don't know. You know, it's like it's, you know, it's splitting hairs at that point.
Yeah,
it's
after like, she spent all that money, she better look good.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's funny because her interviews, she's a professing Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not dogging people because everybody's in their own place. And, you know, we're at our best, we're hypocrites. You know what I mean? Nobody
right.
can really fully live what they believe. So I get it. But it's almost like a delusional world. So she's in an interview and they said, so what's your message? She goes, well, the message is that it's about inner beauty is what really matters.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they're like, well, what are you talking about? Because that's not the message you're sending. She's like, well, it's just that it's about your inner beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, triple D's aren't big enough. She's like, mm-hmm. well, they're actually a J, but I really wanted an H for Heidi. I wanted to make him an H for Heidi.
Oh, my God.
And then they said...
So what size did she get him? G?
A J.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't even... Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's obviously something wrong with you when
yeah.
you need that kind of attention, you know?
Yeah, and it's like... Yeah, it's like... Yeah. They say people... Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what you do with that. I mean, you know, I get it. I see it all the time, but then you see it, and you're like, what? And then they asked her, they said, please tell us that all the surgery and your photo shoots and everything and the timing of it has nothing to do with you dropping your album.
Yeah.
Like the timing. She goes, no, that wasn't planned. That was just God's timing.
Yeah.
That was God's timing. Isn't that hysterical?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you thought it, I wouldn't share it.
Yeah.
People aren't going to get it. Anyway.
No. No, they're not going to get it for sure.
Yeah.
Let's take another short break because I want to see if our guest is here.
Sure.
I mean, if she is late, I still don't want her to wait to just waste the whole morning. So we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Thank you. are the confines the FCC places on terrestrial radio. That's why I tune in to the internet and listen to LA Talk Radio. It's better than sucking cock. Oh my.
Oh my, indeed.
Wow.
Do you know who George Takei is?
I'm not sure, no.
No, you're probably not a Trekkie. He used to be on Star Trek.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's been on Howard Stern and stuff many times. So he's back. Actually, he's on Heroes.
Really? Which one is he?
He's a Japanese man, like an older
guy. Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. He's like the father, I think. Is he the father?
I think he's the father or something. I've never watched the show before.
It's a good show, actually. Well, it's kind of changed a lot, taken a lot of turns, but it's filmed really great.
I think they killed off his character or something.
Really?
Yeah, maybe that would tell you something. I don't know. But yeah, that's him. And it's not the real him, of course. But
yeah, that's funny.
So you mentioned something about Kevin Smith having problems with Southwest Airlines.
Man.
What happened there?
Well, for you guys that don't know, I mean, maybe you do. Kevin Smith is the director of like Clerks, Mallrats, you know, Drawing Files, Chasing Amy, a lot of really great films. And he was on a flight on Southwest Airlines, and he was asked to get off the flight because his size, that he was too big and taking up too much space. And Kevin Smith pretty much threw a fit and, you know, told him where to, you know, where they can put their extra seat.
Right.
And, you know, he did get off the flight. And then, I mean, here's...
How embarrassing, huh?
It's so embarrassing. And, you know, his thing is, you know, you guys needed to, you know, accommodate your larger clientele. And this is actually, I think what he says, he's like, yeah, where is it? He's like, basically, you know, it's not about the size of me, it's the size of basically your seats.
Mm-hmm.
And he tweeted, you know, already seated, ready to go, when a Southwest attendant named Suzanne told me Captain Lisseth deemed me as a safety risk. He was deemed as a safety risk.
Really?
What?
Wow.
Yeah. So Southwest Airlines right now is, they're really backpedaling, trying to burn out fires. It's a lot of bad PR. I mean, he's a pretty big director.
Yeah.
And you know, they're giving him a lot of vouchers and apologies. They've tweeted about their apologies. Like, who tweets about their apology? But apparently Kevin Smith is not accepting the apology.
Yeah.
So,
well, look what they're saying. They're saying if a customer cannot comfortably lower the armrest and infringes on a portion of another seat, a customer seated adjacent would be very uncomfortable, and a timely exit from the aircraft in the event of an emergency might be compromised if we allow a cramped, restricted seating arrangement. So, you know, I mean, the thing is this, is that, yes, the seats, I mean, on Southwest, there's no way, because me, and I'm pretty thin, I think, when I sit there, I flew to Vegas a few months ago,
yeah,
and I sat in the middle seat.
Mm-mm.
Let me tell you, I could not move for the whole hour.
No.
I just sat there, and I could not move. I couldn't even read newspaper because I couldn't spread my hands a little bit.
Yeah, and
Yeah, so... I mean, that's one thing that I think he's right about, you know?
It's a really hard situation because it's like, I've heard it said, you know, and this may be a famous quote, and I don't know who did it, but it says, you know, your rights end where mine begin and vice versa. And so there's kind of this concept of we have individualism until it starts to infringe on other people.
Right.
So I understand that. However, there's so much of this like normalizing that happens in our country of everybody's got to look this way, everybody's got to be this way, everything's got to fit in its spot. And literally, in this case, it's like, you know, the reality is that, you know, not everybody is a certain size.
Right.
And, you know, instead of penalizing people and saying, well, you don't fit into what we consider the norm or the standard, instead of accommodating them, they're being penalized. And I don't feel comfortable with this.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. I get the logisticals, but I think it's just weird, man. You know, you're going to go up to somebody and say, sorry, you're just a little too much of a fat ass today. Can you get off?
Well, but what if he doesn't fit in the seat? What do you do? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a problem, you know? And the question is, how many wider seats do they make, you know? I mean, the wide seats go to first class, and that's where people pay a lot more.
Yeah.
You know? So it is a dilemma, you know? But I don't know if maybe they didn't do it in the right way or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, although I totally get it, I mean, you think that they... Not that they can show favoritism or discrimination, but
Right. Seriously,
you might have not have wanted to go after somebody that was going to bring you such bad press. I mean, he's all over the place with this thing. You know, he's on TMZ, he's on LA Times, he's everywhere with this.
Right.
Tweeting about it, and it's funny. It's funny, but it's like...
It is funny, but what if you had to sit next to him? You know, that would be tough. You know?
Hey, you know? I thought it like that, you know.
No, I mean, for anybody to have to sit next to him, it would be very uncomfortable. And then what would you do, you know?
You
probably wish, I wish he weren't sitting here.
I'm going to be honest. I'd give him my headshot and resume is what I'd do. And I'd
Yeah, just because it's him, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like, here's my headshot and resume. And by the way, you're really snuggly.
Yeah.
Try to snuggle up. I don't know.
But I mean, I've heard of this happening before, but they didn't make that big a deal. Although it was in the news, you know, so it was
a big deal. Really went off.
Yeah.
He went off about it. He tweeted about it. I would have too, man. I'd be pissed. I'm not gonna lie. I would be upset.
Yeah. But I would imagine it's not the first time that he's had that kind of problem, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder how much he weighs. It doesn't say here.
I don't know.
It doesn't say, but you know, I mean, if he's pretty obese and pretty big, then
I don't think he's like massive. He's just a big guy. Yeah. Like he's not like, I don't think he's obese. I mean, I don't know, but he's just a big dude.
Yeah.
And so but
you're right, you know, I mean, they probably should have a few seats where they accommodate larger people.
Yeah, I mean, just think, I hate to...
Even taller people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hate to use this as an analogy or, you know, metaphor or whatever. But, you know, we make exceptions for people that have disabilities.
Right.
And we have to. It's illegal. You have to accommodate handicap. Right?
Right.
I'm not saying that they're handicapped, but I am saying that they need special accommodations.
Right.
I don't know. I really don't know where that line is drawn. And
It's a problem.
Might
but
be Kevin Smith.
But that's the problem with airplanes in general. I mean, the seats are just so narrow that you can't even fit in there when you're a normal size.
That's so true. It really is. They're just like a sardine in there.
Yeah.
You're just hoping that the person next to you wore deodorant.
Yeah.
You know.
And it makes it the longest hour you've ever lived.
Yeah.
It was a terrible flight when I flew. A few months ago, you know, and I sat right in the middle, man.
You went to Vegas, though.
Yeah.
How was it?
So it was 1 hour. I mean, an hour flight. How was it?
Yeah.
Did
you get your Vegas on?
That was a few months ago. I don't even remember.
Really?
I think no.
Apparently, I just stayed in Vegas.
Actually, I went to a.
Yeah.
No, I think I went to a convention or something.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
It was just for the day.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Quick little flight.
Yeah.
Speaking of plane trips, I read this the other day in the LA Times that a gentleman who's a student at Pomona College was flying from the East Coast back to California, and he had flashcards that were in Arabic, and he was learning vocabulary, and some of the words were bomb and terrorism.
Really?
Yeah. So he was, I know, this is really interesting. So he was actually taken off the flight.
Uh-huh.
They did a shakedown, went through all of his stuff, they detained him, they interrogated him, he missed his flight. And now he is suing, is it the FSA? I can't remember. It's you know what I'm talking about? The
FAA.
FAA. Right. He's suing him because he's basically saying it's a violation of the First Amendment and that, you know, he can learn whatever terminology he wants. Well, come to find out, the guy has been making several trips to the Middle East. He's been learning the language and the culture because he wants to be a diplomat in the Middle East.
Right.
He's total white bread dude.
Right.
Just learning vocabulary. And he says he needs to learn those terminologies because he can watch the news and understand their news.
What's being
translated. And I'm like, wow, this is really interesting because I get it. Mm-hmm. I totally get it. However, let's be honest. I mean, is it really that smart to be flashing your flashcards?
Probably not. You know? And I mean, you can see the justification for this. I mean, today we're very sensitive to these
things. Very sensitive,
And the thing is that even if you have a suspicion that someone is like that, I think it's your duty to find out what's going on, you know, and dig deeper into it. And, you know, so... You know, I mean, if I were on that plane, I would have been happy that they got rid of me.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, it's like you don't have to do this on the plane.
Yeah, you know? To me, it just doesn't seem like a lot of discretion. Although I get where he's coming from. He's like, I have this freedom to learn whatever language I want, whatever terminology that I want, and not be, you know.
Yeah, except when you're perceived to be a danger to other people, you know. And maybe there wasn't much basis, but, I mean, cops do it all the time. You know, they arrest people and then find out that it's the wrong people and stuff. But that's part of the job, you know.
I kind of thought so, too. I totally did. I mean, he makes a compelling argument, and he's suing him. So.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to town.
Yeah.
He's gonna do it. But it's really, really interesting. And some of the feedback was, you know, we need more people like him that are trying to bridge the gap between the cultures and learn about the cultures and not be penalized because they are
Right.
You know, but it's just the setting. It's the context, I think, is the issue. Not the fact that he's, you know, learning about it. It's the fact that he's doing it on a plane.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not even allowed to say the word bomb, right?
I don't think you're allowed
to say those words.
Where, on the plane?
On a plane or in.
Really?
I don't know this for sure, but I think that you're not allowed to, you know, use those, I don't know, that sounds
like
weird.
In public places and stuff? Like fire?
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, yeah. Kind of like that, so.
Like yelling fire in a theater.
Yeah. I think it's the same kind of thing, right? So.
Maybe. Maybe, who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know.
Yeah. So how was that? So we started talking a little bit about this. So Valentine's Day for you was pretty slow.
It was. It was fun in one way. 13th and 14th, I've been filming a pitch pilot for a TV show.
Uh-huh.
It's called Inmates, and it's basically like taking the cast of Cheers and throwing them in a prison. And
really?
It's funny. It's a comedy.
Wow.
And it's really like a lot of comics. It's funny because it's a few Canadian friends that I have, but then they brought in their like awesome super crew from Canada to play a lot of these awesome parts. Really great cast. And you know, they're just filming it right now and they're going to pitch it and we'll see how it goes. And they wrote this is so funny. So they're personal friends of mine. And I said, look, I'll help you guys out however you can. And they wrote a role for me, a part that's really funny. Female, one of the few female characters, you know, just like this funny guard. Well then it turned out because they're just doing kind of a trailer, not the full episodes. They're like, well, you know what? Your part's not going to really be in the trailer. I was like, that's cool. Whatever. I'll still do the makeup because I offered to do the makeup and some of the setup and stuff, you know. And then they said, well, you know, don't get mad, but could you play one of the hookers? Can you play a hooker? And I was like, listen, okay. And I'd already said I'd help them. You know, I already said that like, oh, I've got your back. I'm going to support you no matter what. So I was like, sure, I'll play a hooker. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I had like the main hooker role.
Uh-huh.
I was like one of four hookers.
I see. Okay. Not even the main hooker.
I wasn't even the main hooker. But it was so much fun though. I had a great time. And I actually was a little bit like, you know, you have to check your pride and you have to go, you know what? I'm a team player. It's not about me. I'm here to help.
Right.
But I was like, listen guys, okay. I will play hooker number one role. Okay, but I just need you guys to be very professional on set when I come out in my outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's nothing, you know, I just want you to know. Like boundaries, right? And so I also did the makeup and some of the wardrobe for the hookers. And so I skeezed them up and I put them in some outfits and I saved the best outfit for me.
Obviously.
And I walked out and I was like, bum, 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 ba-dum, bum, ba-dum, bum.
Wow,
I had
sure
like a corset. I had a corset on. I had fishnets. The other girls all had dresses and I just had on like a leotard type thing. It was it was ridiculous. It was way too much. But I went from like, don't be unprofessional to, whoa, very like, you know, Broadway. But I had a great time doing that. And they were so professional and it's really funny material and great, great, great cast.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where it goes.
So what did you have to do as the hooker?
No, it was very campy. It wasn't like anything too crazy.
Right.
Basically, we were being smuggled into a prison, and it just shows us like, oh, this isn't the club. We're with the DJ, and then we're like kind of lost, and we're in the prison, and you know we're being smuggled in by one of the inmates, and then the next shot is us kicking the guy on the ground, taking our fancy little like Vegas purses and hitting him, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a little part, but it was really really fun.
But it was funny.
It was really over the top. It was really campy, very tongue in cheek. So
yeah.
A lot of fun. So that part was a lot of fun, and then you know, but then
at the end, kept you busy.
It kept me busy.
Yeah. And what about the game show you were going to?
Oh my gosh.
The Spanish game show.
Oh my gosh. I don't like to brag.
Kara was here last week and she was going to film a game show.
It's like the Spanish version of Elimidate. It's an acting gig. Mm-hmm. It's an acting job. You know, I was like, well, they're paying me. You know, it's not going to pay the rent, but, you know, it'll pay something. And it's, you know, I don't watch Telemundo, do you?
No.
There we go. Easy breezy.
Yeah.
So I said yes, and I went to the studio and whatever. And, I mean, if anybody's been doing the working acting thing, it's like, you know, you go through your different gigs and your different levels of, you know, whatever. And so that's just reality TV is not really real, and they hire actors and whatever. So they fed me some lines, and I had to say, claro que sí, si no. Con quien nos besamos. I had to say that.
Really?
Which is like, really? If not, who else will we kiss? And that was my line. And I got eliminated after the second round because obviously they can't keep feeding me lines. So I was the only white person there.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why they would even be interested in the first place.
I think it was just a last minute kind of casting call, and you know, but I mean, it was so stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I could have told you that before
I
you
knew
went
it was,
there.
I wasn't expecting to like win an Oscar. I'm not. It's not gonna be on the IMDb page. But you know, at least I put some cash in my pocket, and no one needs to know about it except for you and I.
There you
and
go.
And a million people listening.
Yeah.
So.
There you go.
It was so funny though.
Yeah. So how long did you spend there?
I was there for about, I want to say 2 hours.
Yeah.
So it was
That's
brief,
it.
You know.
Yeah.
Started off with, oh, we want you to wear pajamas. Then it was like, we want you to wear lingerie. And I was like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
So I kind of did a hybrid of the two.
Yeah.
Like a cute pajama set.
Yeah.
And they skanked my hair up. They gave me like big, like just big curls.
Big hair and stuff.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's really funny. It was like, I was like, oh, this is not my life right now. This is not my life right now. Don't look at the camera.
Well, that's
you know.
Acting. You
there
know, you
go.
Gotta be somebody else.
Yeah. And it's all part of the long before story.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's done.
So now, did you learn any acting at all, or does this come naturally to you?
You know, I definitely think it's I think it's both. I mean, mm-hmm. I definitely I took some classes. I did theater all throughout like junior high and high school.
Really?
I did a lot of musicals. And then I moved out here, and I was like, I'm gonna be a star.
Yeah.
You know, and had to find out a place to live first.
Yeah.
You know, get a job first. But no, and I studied at the Groundlings, mm-hmm. Which is a really great improv school out here, and started doing a lot of stand-up, and you know, a lot of it you kind of learn as you go, and I definitely think there's just some stuff you can't teach,
right?
And some stuff you can. So,
right. So how did you decide to go into stand-up though? I mean, did you feel you were funny? And
that's such a good question.
Yeah.
I they say that comedy is kind of like a tool. It's something that is bred out of defense.
Mm.
Like, you know, growing up, you get made fun of, you, like, learn how to deflect it, turn it into a joke, things like that.
Right.
And not that I was really that kid, but I definitely went through a lot of stuff growing up where you just don't know yourself, you're going through those weird, awkward stages, didn't have the most stable home life. And
right.
So humor just started happening, and I made friends that way. And I remember just being in high school and being in choir, and we were doing a Christmas musical, and there was the role of Frosty the Snowman.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be like a snowman that's a stand-up comedian.
Right.
Figure that. Or something like that. And I auditioned for the part, and I pitched it to like the whole class. And I remember like feeling so nervous and sweaty because I was a freshman, and I was like sweating. And I was like, okay, guys, I have this idea. I'm going to come out as Frosty Snowman. I'm going to have a cigar in my mouth and a 5 o'clock shadow, and I'm going to just have really messy, like, you know, white, fluffy snow rolls, and I'm gonna like try to tell my jokes and, you know, throw the cards off stage and do a crazy dance. And they're like, that's funny. And so I did it when the time came, and I just got really into it. It's really hard to paint the picture, but turned out to be really funny. And then I started realizing, oh, you know, there's something going on there. So
yeah, I like to make people laugh.
It's so rewarding. And I think that like laughter is a form of grace. It's a form of love, and it's, you know, a good way to like serve somebody, and it kind of just softens and paints pictures, and it's just another way to communicate.
So
here I am today with Sam in the Morning.
I was going to ask you, do you have any siblings?
I have two brothers.
Uh-huh.
And one's in Texas and one's in Florida.
Uh-huh.
They're both younger than I am, and they're very different from one another. My youngest brother is kind of just now starting off in life, and he's, you know, figuring out what he's going to do and whether he's going to college or the workforce. And he's super cute, really, really fun. And then the one just younger than me is in Texas, and he's a salesman.
Mm.
And he's intense, Sam. Mm. He is intense. Yeah. He's one of those, like, fast talkers. He's like, he made way too much money at a really young age, and he likes to pick up the tab and act like a big deal, and, you know, it's hysterical. It's funny. It's like, you know, like, the experience doesn't match the income type thing. And so, you know, he tries to give me, like, lessons on life. I'm like, dude, you need to pipe down, little man. Like, I've been there, you know? Like, you know, it's funny. It's so funny. He's like, hey, Karen, no, what you got to do? No. Hi, Kara. You know, it's just ridiculous. It's like, Matthew, you know, I get it.
So you're the oldest, and you have two younger brothers.
Yeah,
right?
I actually did have an older sister, but she passed away
really?
A couple years ago. So.
Yeah. Wow. What was that like?
Well, it wasn't fun, let me tell you.
No, well, I can imagine.
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate. She had a very troubled life.
Really?
And she was only 26 when she
26.
Died.
26?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, she went through some really, really hard times, and she like ended her own life.
Wow,
so
wow.
She took her own life. And you know,
how
it's,
terrible is that?
I it's mean, like it's just know. It's really weird. It's really hard to ever put your arms around it. But I do have peace about it now. I really do. I mean, it was just it was hard, and I really struggled to try to understand where she was coming from during that time. And she was kind of drowning out some depression and suffering from that. And
obviously. Yeah. I mean, if you get to that point.
Yeah, you're a little
down.
And
I'm sure it's probably not not a surprise for you when something like this happens, right? After a life that's troubled, like you said.
You know, it's not shocking, but it is. Because you're like, oh, you know, somebody's threatening to take their life for like since you've known them.
Right,
and then they actually do it. You're like, oh.
Wow,
that's weird. But I just really believe that she is in a better place. Mm. And I really do believe that, you know, she gave her life to God when she was the most sane and she had the most capability in her heart and mind.
Right.
And I believe that because God is faithful, that he will hold on to us, even if we don't. And so I believe that she is with the Lord and in a better place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. This time around, life was hard for her.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And you know,
kind of a lost soul, you know?
Yeah, and I just believe God has so much grace and mercy, and I believe he just, you know, he loves us regardless, and he holds on to us, and I just really, really, really believe that. Because I remember, you know, a lot of stuff goes through your mind when it happens, but when I first got the phone call, my initial feeling, and then I had to go back to this after really struggling with it, was that she's not in pain anymore. Mm. Was the first thing, boom, it entered my mind, oh, she's not in pain. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she died. But I was just like, wow, there's just a sense of like, oh, she's in a better place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it was. I wrote a song about it, and it really inspired some music. And I'm milking her death to have great hits on iTunes. No, I'm just playing. That's awful. But no, I actually, a great song came out of it, and, you know.
Yeah.
So
you write songs?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Lyrics and music?
I write the lyrics and I write the music. And it's kind of a newer thing the last couple years. I picked up a guitar, didn't know how to play.
Yeah.
Just started playing around, strumming on it, and some tunes came, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's kind of good. And then I got really into it and made everybody listen to it before it was really ready.
Yeah.
I had so many great friends that were like, okay, Karen, not quite ready, but good for you. Just keep
You're
it up.
You're on the way.
Yeah, but they were just like, they were such great friends and family. And so, yeah, so I actually have a demo up on MySpace right now, so it's good. And when I get the funds together, I'm going to go back and re-record it, and, you know.
Sounds good. Well, where can we find it on MySpace?
MySpace.com/ Kara Kimbrough Music, KaraKimbrough Music.
Sounds good. Well, I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, take a little listen. Take a little listen. So it's in development.
I know. I used to write songs when I was young, in my teens and stuff. Yeah.
That's so cool.
And I know. And I used to always play them with a guitar. And then a couple of years ago, I finally got to record one with a whole band and
stuff. Are you serious?
Yeah. And it was like so cool, you know. It was because I love singing. I used to love playing the guitar and stuff like that, you know, write music and that. So I can relate, you know. It's a lot of fun.
It's so like giving birth, I mean, which I've never done. But I'm, you know, metaphorically speaking, although I witnessed my friend's birth a few months ago.
Really?
Oh, my gosh, Sam.
Wow.
Do you have kids?
Yes,
okay.
I have two, and they're teens already.
But you were there in the delivery
room? Yeah, I was, and it's not a good idea.
Let me tell you. Well, I didn't know what I was signing up for. My friend was like, I really want you. She's like, I really want you to just be there. I was like, sure, I'll be in the waiting room. No problem. Just let me know when it's ready. No, I was in the room, and I was holding her left thigh.
Really?
I saw front row center. I saw what happens to it down there.
Right.
I saw the snip. I saw it. I got swiped. I had the umbilical cord hit my arm and like left a little smear of blood. It was like war. But let me just tell you, I don't think any sport, whether it be football or rugby or whatever is the most aggressive sport, you know, soccer, whatever, I don't think any of that compares to a woman birthing out a 10-pound kid.
Wow.
I mean, and barely, and like no meds. I don't think anything compares to that.
Yeah.
That's
very painful.
Mm.
Very painful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy not to take shots.
Man, yeah. She was trying to do the morphine and or whatever it is, you know, taking hits of whatever.
Epidural.
Epidural acid, whatever. She was trying to get her fix on, but apparently the meds slowed down her ability to push with the contractions, and she had a really large kid. And they were like, if you're trying to do this natural, meaning like if you don't want to have a C-section, you need to really, we need to get you off the pain meds so that we can get you to push this kid out. So she started not taking the meds as much because it's kind of like a hit thing.
Yeah.
And it was just, so by the time she's pushing out this kid, I mean, I was crying. I was like, stop it. She's hurting, okay? Just take the baby out. Like, what did it ever do to you?
Oh, well.
But she's a, she's a beautiful little girl named Gracie. So, so cute.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe one day you'll get to experience it, too. Who knows?
Yeah, not any rush, but I'll put it on my to-do list. You know, hey.
Well, you are amazing, Kira.
Thank you, Sam.
What a great first day. And take care.
I will.
Okay.
I'll be seeing you tomorrow.
You have any big plans for today?
Today I'm just going to work on getting some errands done, doing getting the tags registered, and tomorrow I have a big audition.
Oh, wow. Sounds good.
Yeah, comedy audition, so I'll tell you guys about that.
Yeah, sounds good. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sam.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To get in contact with the show, please send email to info@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.